Disney would lobby against the merger in Washington. Iger broke the news to Time Warner in a telephone call to Levin and Joseph Collins, the chief executive of Time Warner Cable, who had been handling the negotiations with Disney. "We're concerned about the AOL deal," Iger said. Their cable deal was now off the table. Levin and Collins were surprised and angry. "We had a deal," Levin said, referring to his handshake with Eisner. "The world has changed," Iger said. "The players have changed. It's AOL and you. It's a more complicated world." A relatively discreet business dispute over cable access had escalated into something much bigger. Levin argued that Disney was abusing the cable negotiations by tying them to the merger. But Iger wanted new terms and, in what he considered an effort to be deadly candid, he added, "We feel you'll be hard-pressed to cause trouble because of the merger process you have to go through." The conversation came to an abrupt close. Iger followed up by instructing Ann Sweeney, the president of the Disney Channel, to send a new term sheet, which he concedes was aggressive. In addition to all the previous requests, it removed some assurances that Time Warner had sought with respect to ESPN, asked for about $100 million more in fees, and contained numerous non-discrimination clauses, guarantees that Disney programming would get equal treatment. Disney's focus on the merger was also made explicit in a provocative letter of February 18, 2000, from Sweeney to Time Warner's Collins, in which Sweeney said that she was even less optimistic that we will be able to bridge the material differences between us. Time Warner executives estimated the additional cost of the proposed new deal at $300 million. Its officials were further galled by the emphasis on equal treatment in programming. In their view, Disney conspicuously favored its own programming on its networks. Time Warner responded with a term sheet of its own. It rejected nearly all of Disney's requests and lowered the price it was willing to pay. One morning during the first week of March 2000, Eisner, still preoccupied with the AOL merger with Time Warner, got out of the shower with a plan for escalating the campaign. He went straight to his computer and drafted an email outlining the strategy he thought Disney ought to follow, which was to launch an attack in Houston, where Time Warner owned the cable system. Full-page advertisements in the Houston Chronicle warned that cable subscribers were at risk of losing ABC because of Time Warner's refusal to agree to a deal. Disney offered to subsidize the installation of satellite dishes if subscribers switched to a rival service. Disney gave away vouchers for 15,000 satellite dishes in less than 3 weeks. To test the effect of the Houston campaign, Disney declared a unilateral truce on April 1st. It suspended the satellite giveaway program and the public relations blitz, and it proposed new terms for the retransmission agreement, softening the position it had staked out in February. But Time Warner's bargaining position got tougher, with Levin and Collins angered by what they considered Disney's betrayals and bad faith. Time Warner unveiled the ultimate threat. If Disney didn't agree to an 8-month extension of the existing retransmission agreement, Time Warner would cease transmitting ABC when the current extension expired on April 30th. In other words, Time Warner threatened to use what Iger thought of as a